Welcome back to the Book of Proverbs, and Chapter 5 has a parental warning on it. We will be talking about adult matters. Kids, let your parents check it first. For the rest of you, if the talking skull at the entrance to Pirates of the Caribbean says, properly warned, you be properly warned. Now, in Proverbs 5, we continue through a set of clear and strong directives from a father to a son. And here, warnings. And these warnings are blunt. Peyton, start us out.
Verse 1. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Turn your ear to my words of insight, that you may maintain discretion and your lips may preserve knowledge. For the lips of the adulterous woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she's as bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Her paths wander aimlessly, but she does not know it.
The warnings here and through the next two chapters are to his sons against the strange woman, the adulterous woman. Literally translated, it just says the other woman. That is, any woman besides the one you're married to, son. We have the warning in verse 3. The lips of the adulterous woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. Solomon begins the warning with where you meet temptation, through your senses. The temptation looks really good, and the seductive argument smoother than oil. But like a delicious poison that will kill you, verse 4 tells us that in the end, she is bitter as gall, sharp as a double-edged sword. And although you may not physically die, she will end your life as you know it. Like Adam and Eve in the garden, nothing will ever be the same again. So before his sons head down that path, Solomon warns them. Nowhere in the Bible will you find any warnings stronger than against this one path, this one small decision that could destroy everything. In verse 5, her feet go down to death. Her steps lead straight to the grave. She gives no thought to the way of life. Solomon's words are direct and strong because he knows that infidelity could destroy his kids, ruin their lives. So what's the direction they should take? What path should they follow? What path should they follow? Peyton.
In verse 8, we're given advice on what to do to avoid this fate. Keep to a path far from her. Do not go near the door of her house, lest you should lose your honor to others and your dignity to one who is cruel. Lest strangers feast on your wealth and your toil enrich the house of another. At the end of your life, you will groan when your flesh and body are spent. Solomon warns his sons here that the price you pay for a prostitute isn't really the price you pay. There's a much greater cost. It will cost you your friends, your family, your integrity, and anything else in your life that really matters. Not all treasure is silver and gold, mate. In that sense, whether physical infidelity or even through pornography, you will end up paying a price 100 times over what you think you did.
Standing at the crossroads, Solomon is giving his sons a choice. Choose your path wisely. The pathway to pleasure today is the way to regret tomorrow. It may look tempting from where you're standing, but becomes a hard, grueling, and uphill climb, and nobody who has ventured down that path would tell you to choose it. In verse 11, at the end of your life, you will groan. When your flesh and body are spent, you will say, how I hated discipline, how my heart spurned correction. It says, you will groan. Feel the pain in his words. Regret is an awful feeling. It's like a weight sinking into your heart that just keeps you held down at the bottom. And all you have to show for your life is a jar of dirt. Sadly, too many Christians look down the path of adultery and think, I can be forgiven. And that's technically true. But being forgiven of sin's guilt doesn't always relieve us from sin's consequences. And worse, it does very little to undo the pain you've caused others.
We see the young man here at the end of his life. All young men become old men with time. And like a choose-your-own-adventure story, this young man is faced with the consequences of his choice. Sadly, many people realize only at the end of their life that the advice of those who went on before them was based on life's hard-bitten realities. But if you wait to listen when you're old, it's too late. Your bank account is empty. Your family's moved out. Your friends have moved on. All you're left holding is regret and the ghost of what could have been lingering to haunt you. The problem with regret is that it doesn't come with a time machine like we had in the last chapter. We can't go back in time and change what happened or what decisions we made. Our consequences can be tough to live with. And the irony is that Solomon had made many mistakes. After all, he'd had 1,000 wives and concubines. He'd been dragged away from God by them. But he wanted the life he could never have for his sons. It's possible that Solomon knew this groaning that he hadn't listened to instruction from personal experience.
True, Solomon messed up a lot in life. And those of you familiar with regret will relate to Solomon's desire for better things for his kids. And that reality should give us pause here. If you only picture this adulterous man or woman as the obvious cheater, the lecherous pagan, think again. Quite often for a Christian, the real danger is someone who plays the good guy. But as Jack Sparrow warned us, a dishonest man you can always trust to be dishonest. Honestly, it's the honest ones you want to watch out for, because you can never predict when they're going to do something incredibly stupid. And speaking of movies, I want to remind you of the PG-13 warning as we move into verse 15. I'm not saying you need to kick all your kids out of the room. I mean exactly what PG means, parental guidance. These are things that kids need guidance on. They need clear talk. And too often, we as Christians make the mistake of talking around important issues instead of talking about them. Well, if the scripture isn't silent on them, neither should we be either. Solomon is talking about sex here, and he's talking directly.
Solomon is also blunt with his sons here in verse 15. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Now, this gets a little poetic, so it takes a little explanation. A cistern was a container of water. It's where you went to be refreshed. And most interpreters believe the cistern refers to your spouse. Solomon has a high view of marriage here, telling his sons, get that regular refreshment from your wife. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your well. Should your springs overflow in the streets? Your streams of water in the public squares? When you had a cistern of water, you preserved it. Water was a precious commodity. You kept it in that container. In the same way, he's saying, your sexuality belongs at home, not overflowing into the streets for strangers. Like a cistern, your source of refreshment, the sexuality that a husband and wife share, isn't for anyone else. It's a spring of fresh water. Let them be yours alone, never to be shared with strangers. May your fountain be blessed, and may you rejoice in the wife of your youth. There's a hint here that sharing your cistern with everyone makes the water dirty and causes disease. But this beautiful picture of the wife not just as a cistern, but as an endless fountain of refreshment is something that only a couple that preserves the sacredness of their growing sexuality ever get to know. May you rejoice in her, the wife of your youth. There's something about a monogamous relationship that causes sex to be better with time, more romantic, and with a history of trust and experimentation. This is where Solomon is going in verse 19 when he compares her to a loving doe, a graceful deer. To a man that values his wife, she becomes more beautiful, and lust gives way to love. In this way, Solomon alludes to something deeper, saying, may her breast satisfy you always. May you ever be captivated by her love. Why, my son, be intoxicated with another man's wife? Why embrace the bosom of a wayward woman? The choice is yours. You can have what is truly yours, or give it away for what you can never hold on to. The breast of the wayward woman, moving on to the next paying customer.
Okay, here's the reality, guys. These verses may be a bit awkward, but they're crucial. Turns out that the male of the species are attracted to the female breast. You may not have known that, but ask your teenage son. It's reality. But step back a second. The female breast is also given for the nurturing of children, for the building of a family. There is hardly anything more beautiful than a mother caring for her child, especially when it's your child. The bond formed between mother and baby is amazing. She becomes the fountain, literally, not just of refreshment, but of love for your family. It's hard to put into terms for a young man until you've experienced it. Solomon is painting a picture for his sons of something so rewarding, so far beyond the paltry little excitement he gets from a little glimpse of cleavage. There's a promise of a reward that only faithful men experience. It's the contentment of being satisfied, not just physically with your lover, but emotionally with your wife. Be satisfied. And like peanut butter and jelly, he puts the physical and emotional connection together, saying, "May you ever be intoxicated with her love." This is the right kind of drunk. Be intoxicated with the love of a faithful wife. All right, Peyton, we covered the awkward bits. It was either madness or brilliance. It's remarkable how often those two traits coincide. Steer me out of here, fast.
Solomon speaking of love rather than lust is his way of steering away from the body parts in general. The fact is that sex is about much more than enjoying somebody's body. He's connecting the sexual act of intimacy with the love for that individual. And I love that he talks about being intoxicated figuratively with the wife of your youth, in rapture with her love, as opposed to the prostitute, where he compares it to being drunk, as in literally intoxicated, making bad decisions and cheapening the whole experience of using another's body parts. I didn't really steer us clear of that passage, did I?
No, man, you didn't. But it's not your fault or mine. We're simply riding in this car with Solomon, and he's pedal to the metal with the awkward to the end of the chapter. And I love this about the faith of the ancient Hebrews. Literally every area of life was open to the Lord, including sexuality. Western culture is far too influenced by the Greeks, who think of the body as the source of evil and the soul as the source of good. To a Hebrew, however, the body is a gift, and so even our sexuality was a gift to be celebrated. Yet in the Bible, sex is also holy. When Solomon says in verse 21, "For your ways are in full view of the Lord, and he examines all your paths," he means that even your sexuality is a sacred gift from God that can glorify and worship God as you celebrate a loving relationship with your wife.
That's why there's an entire book of the Bible called Song of Solomon that celebrates sexuality and romance. The problem with society today is that when our culture discusses sex, it seems to only be shouting the message of the foolish adulterous woman in this chapter. Sex is dirty, naughty, scandalous, and titillating. Promiscuity is often celebrated, while faithfulness is mocked. But Solomon wants to make sure that he is the first and loudest voice on sexuality that his sons hear.
For you parents listening through, trying to decide whether your kids can listen, let me encourage you. Don't make the topic of sex taboo or something that only naughty people talk about. Talk about it with respect and reverence. God made it good, and he made it holy. Dirty jokes are only dirty because they sully something pure. Sadly, most of us learned about sex as kids when adults told dirty jokes. We don't want to do our kids a disservice by failing to speak about sexuality where the Bible isn't silent. It's not a topic to leave to whispers and innuendos or treat as inappropriate fodder for Christians to discuss. Part of training up youth is speaking to the next generation in a way that doesn't steer clear of the issues and push them back into hiding. The Bible talks about sex, brings its beauty into the light, and exposes the works of darkness. As verse 21 and 23 says, "God examines all your paths. For the lack of discipline, the fool will die, led astray by their own folly." That's a dark ending for a foolish young man. And dead men tell no tales. And we'll be back in Proverbs 6.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.